All right, so we are holding on Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, about the middle of the Amud line. We're going to come on Shmuel. Okay, we started discussing. The Mishnah had said that if you shecht or burn according to the difference of your size, the parah adroma outside of the gas, then a person is not chayav for that for shchut, for shchitzer or halal b'chutz, on the grounds that it's not a korban. It's not something that's meant to be brought on the mizbeach. So we were discussing what is the gas. The Rish Lakish has said it means there's a certain area that has to be pre-checked to make sure that there's no bones or bodies or whatever underground. No kever at the hood. So they would have this particular area that they would check, make sure it's clean of any such thing, and so they would dig out a hole in the ground to check all the way down to bedrock or virgin soil or whatever, and that, he says, is a gas. So Rav Yechanan says to him, why do you need that? The whole Eretz Yisrael is bodur. The whole Eretz Yisrael has a chazakah that it's been checked and made sure that there are no human remains. Well, that's Rav Yechanan is saying. It has a chazakah of it, as we will see, and as we're going to discuss that in the Gemara now. But the point is, Rav Yechanan, the Rish Lakish again holds that Eretz Yisrael in that sense is like other countries. Any particular piece of land might have bodies or bones or whatever buried in it, and therefore, if you want to know for sure, 100% for sure, that a particular area is clean, and you have to check it, or you have to build archways on top of archways. Like
that's why we have to admire the answer. Be careful with archway. They were looking if there was a mess.
But no, so you have, definitely, if you know that there's a place, for example, you have a base up grass, a field where, for example, there was a grave in it, and then it was plowed up, there's concerns that there may be bones scattered all over the field. Or Sada Sha'avat Bakaver, a field in which at one point there was a grave, but you lost track where in the field it is. In general, though, Rabbi Yechanan is saying, Eretz Yisrael in general has a chesed pasha. Whereas Rish Lakish seems to be saying not. Rish Lakish says that even in Eretz Yisrael, you have to check a specific area. So, the Gemara says, what does one have to do with the other? So he's a bandit. What does that have to do with that? Come on. Amar, so we said in the discussion before, Amar Rav Yechanan Ba'alei Tal Eretz Yisrael B'Yurpidi. We said Rav Yechanan says, what do you mean Rish Lakish to have to check this particular area to make sure there's no mason in it? All Eretz Yisrael has a chazaka of being Baduk. So he says, now obviously Rish Lakish doesn't accept that. So B'Maikum Mitzvigi, what is the underlying machloikas between? Machloikas is Mar Sova Yored Mabul Eretz Yisrael or Mar Sova Loyal. Rish Lakish holds that the marble fell in Eretz Yisrael, just as it did everywhere else in the world. Therefore, you can have bones or pieces of bones or whatever embedded in the ground over there, embedded in the mud. And therefore, a person walks on them. They would have been mixed up. They would have been sunken into the dirt and into the mud or whatever. Remember, the water of the marble was so powerful, it scooped up like the top three tefachim of the topsoil. So like the top three tefachim of the topsoil all become a big muck over there into which everything sinks in. So therefore now you have a problem of tumah d'sutta. You may have tumah, you may have a bone or whatever where there's no space above it that would contain the tumah, therefore the tumah goes directly up and directly down. So yeah. So the Rish Lakish holds that you have that issue. The marble fell in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, you have bones possibly embedded in the dirt. Well, Mar Sava Lo Yorad, where's Rav Yechanan holds the marble did not fall in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, later on we're going to discuss if the marble didn't fall in Eretz Yisrael, how did the people in there survive, or what happened. We'll get to that soon. The point is, Rav Yechanan is saying the marble did not fall in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so Tosafot asks the question: what about in the prophet says all the mountains under the entire heaven were covered by the waters of the marble? What are you talking about? So Tosafot explains that the Gemara is going to tell us later that the people in Eretz Yisrael were also affected by the marble, by the heat of the marble. Besides, the water of the marble was boiling hot water. So therefore, even in places where the water of the marble didn't fall, you still have the atmosphere of global warming, basically. So all the people in Eretz Yisrael got to say, that's what I was going to say later. They were all killed by the hevel, by the hot air. But the idea, in other words, as opposed to in other places where there was actually the rain falling, that dissolved and embedded the bodies into the dirt. There is also a picture that Eliezer has a different understanding of it, that the marble didn't fall in Eretz Yisrael, but the water poured into it from the surrounding countries, because after all, the Ramban says on the Pasuk, it's not like Eretz Yisrael doesn't have a wall around it. If the rain fell in other countries and it went 15 amas above the ground surface, inevitably that it were poured over the border into Eretz Yisrael. But our Gemara is taking it that Rabbi Yochanan is saying, according to this, that Eretz Yisrael remained dry, and the only problem, as the Gemara is going to say later, was the hevel. Okay. Well, right, according to our Gemara, that's what you would have to say, right? But the idea is also, even though, as the Gemara is going to say later, the people in Eretz Yisrael who weren't in the cave, obviously, also died from the marble, the difference is, since they weren't killed by the water or the marble, so it was sort of like a more orderly thing. They were able to bury them in specific areas. So it's not like any random place in Eretz Yisrael, says Rav Yochanan, and may have bones in it. Okay, Omer of Nachmi, because Shnei Mikra Echad Doshu. So Rav Nachmi says, actually, Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish, their respective opinions about whether the marble fell in Eretz Yisrael, they're both basing themselves on the same topic. Yechezkel, when he's giving Musa to the Jewish people and telling them how you've made Eretz Yisrael into a Talmudic land with all your Averis, he says, Ben Adam, the Eidosha tells him, Ben Adam, Emor Lot, say to it, say to Eretz Yisrael and people, Ach Eretz Loi Matai Haredi, you are a land that has not been cleansed, Loi Gushma B'yem Zan, it has not been rained on the day of anger, on the day of Hashem's anger. So Rabbi Yochanan Sava, Atmui Mat Makra, Rabbi Yochanan learned the first half of the passage as being like a rhetorical question. How could it be? Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, mi loy mitahara, are you really not a clean country? Are you really a place like the rest of the world that has bones buried in the dirt?
You are.
Yes. Klumya and the continues. Klum yodu alayas shum b'yem zam. After all, he learns the first half of the passage being a rhetorical question and the second half being a statement. How could it be that you, Eretz Yisrael, are an unclean, you can't possibly think that you, Eretz Yisrael, are an unclean land. After all, you weren't rained on at the time of the marble. Therefore, there are no bones buried everywhere in your soil, unlike the rest of the world. So how is it then, according to that explanation, the Chesed was telling the people, look at that, you have the privilege of living in the one country in the world that doesn't have the trauma of the people of the marble. How are you talking that you're acting the way you're acting and making Eretz Yisrael talk? The Shlokish Tzavak is Shlokish. The Shlokish understands the first half of the pasuk to be a statement, a fact. And the second half, says Marashah, he's understanding to be a rhetorical question. Eretz Loi Metohara, you are a land that is not cleansed. You're a land that is Tomei, just like the other lands. After all, Milo Yodu Halayas Trum V'en Zam didn't rain fall on you at the time of Hashem's anger, just like it did in the rest of the world. In other words, you, Eretz Yisrael, also are full of Mesim and remains of Mesim and whatever, just like the rest of the world. So depending on how you learn the pasuk and how you get that either the marble did or didn't fall in Eretz Yisrael.
Is that the case that the kind of
all that? So what they did? Okay, so what it is that the actual Harabayis in the Beit Mikdash itself and other places in Yerushalayim, as we're going to learn in a second, were built on a series of arches on top of arches in such a way that even if there is, yeah, why not? In such a way that even if there is tumma underground, it won't penetrate through the double arches. Elsewhere, okay, according to the Shlokish, you have no choice. If you want to be 100% sure that a place doesn't have a cater, you're going to have to check. So for the Parah Adruma, since Mila also the Parah, we want to make sure that the Parah Adruma is done 100% the right way. Therefore, we would dig out and cast the focus. In other places, fine. What? They did a bridge, that's another thing, that's a bridge to go there. We're talking about the actual place on Harazesim where they shechted and burned it. So Rish Lakish will say that. He'll agree, okay, in other places in Eretz Yisrael, you don't have a choice, you can't go digging up the whole soil of Eretz Yisrael. So in other places, you assume that it's Tahar unless we find out otherwise, but there is the possibility that there might be Kevrat at home, which is why we've learned in Tzachim, we've learned in Nazir, we've learned here and there that there is the concept of Kevrat at home. There could be a concept where a person walks in a certain area and later on they discover that actually there was a body buried underground which nobody ever knew. That's true, but here we're talking about during the time of the Beit Mikdash. After the Beit Mikdash is destroyed, they're not burning part of Adrumas anyway. Here we're dealing with during the... Right, again, so Rish Lakish is not saying... Right, that's the thing. Rish Lakish is agreeing, that's fine. I mean, people can walk wherever they need to in Eretz Yisrael unless they know that a particular area is coming. All it is there is always the possibility. You may walk someplace and later on you'll discover that there was a kever at a home there. Whereas the coins are objection, and you wouldn't have that. Eretz Yisrael has a chazaka of being bothered. Therefore, even for the part of Adruma, you shouldn't need to check a particular area. By the way, this that we're mentioning over here, that we're quoting the pasuk over here about Eretz Yisrael becoming tahar in many places in Chassidus, it talks about the idea that the marble was not just a punishment for the world, it was like a mikveh to cleanse the world. There we see that from this Gemara over here, because we're talking about Eretz Yisrael having been or not been cleansed by the marble. Okay. Eispei the shlokish lot of Yechman. So the shlokish after the Yechman. So you're telling me that, in general, that unless you know otherwise, any place in Eretz Yisrael can be assumed to be Torah. But what about, we learn in a mission in Torah. Now, the thing is like this. When it comes to they wanted to make sure, for purposes of Parah Adruma, they wanted to make sure that the people who are filling up the water for the Parah Adruma, and according to the Rambam, also the ones who are putting the ashes into it and sprinkling on the Kohen Gadol during the week before he prepares the next Parah Adruma, we want to make sure that they're as Tahar as possible. We want to make sure that we have people who never became Tamei Mes. So how do you have people who never became Tamei Mes? There were courtyards in the city of Yerushalayim. Bnuyas ala sela, they were built on bedrock. Underneath them, they had hollow areas. Again, they had these archways or whatever. In case there is a kever underneath the rock, that it won't go through because it'll get stopped by the oil. So it'll get stopped. It'll get contained within that oil underground. Because they'll have these archways on top of archways, such that even if there's something under the first archway, then it'll be contained within the second one, right? Yeah. So they would bring pregnant women, the yoldas, they would give birth in these courtyards, in these areas, and they would raise their children over there for the purpose of that these children, when they get older, if a parah adruma is going to be done, that these children will be available to be doing the milui, to be filling up the water for the parah adruma. We have learned it elsewhere. In particular, actually, the Gemara mentions in Kiddushin that the Gemara mentions in Ksubas that these women were paid a salary or upkeep or whatever out of the treasury of the Beis Mikdash. It's one of the necessities of the Beis Mikdash. So they would raise their children over there. Also, in Sukkah, the Gemara talks about this. Yeah. Eventually, when it came time to prepare a parah adruma, umavim shvarim, they would bring oxen, because oxen have wide backs, and that way the children can ride on them easily without the problem that they might fall off or that they might overhang truma that's on the ground. While gabayin dlosis, on top of the oxen, they would put doors. So you would lay a door on the back of each ox. The tinoikis yoshin alei, and the children would sit on top of those doors. That way you have the ox itself can be an oil in case there's a kever at the home in some place, and the door is a further oil to make sure. This way also the Gemara discusses in Sukkah in case the kids stick out their feet from the side, whatever. This way, yeah. So that's true. So actually, so they talk about that. In fact, they had this on an ongoing basis because you never knew a parah adruma. You never know when the next parah adruma is going to be needed. And the animal is only kosher when it's up to 3 or 4 years old. So therefore, yeah, they would have this on an ongoing basis out of the number of children who went through that, who were born in this way and raised in these chaseres. Probably only in the end, a small fraction of them actually ended up being involved in doing a parah adruma because they only did it 7 times during the time, or 8 times, whatever, during the time of the second birth. Could be. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. The koitzes shall even be yodim. These children will be holding cups made out of stone, because stoneware is not makabel chumah. Umilu. Then they would go to the shiloyah and fill up water over there. At the shiloyah, the Mishnah mentions they could get off the oxen and go fill it up, because nobody buries by springs. So therefore, there's no reason to worry about kever at the home underground over there. But anyway. Yeah. Yeah. So they would fill up the water, the Yashua and Koyman, and then they'd sit back down on the doors and they'd take it to where they're going to fill it up with, to where ashes are going to be put into the cups and make parah adruma water and sprinkle the Koyman bottle with it. Anyway, the point is that the Shlokish is saying to the Yechanan, I who hold that all Eretz Yisrael is just like Chutz La'aretz, there's a real possibility of Kever at the home anywhere, that's why we needed the full elaborate setup for that. But according to you, that kol Eretz Yisrael b'dukehi, why was it necessary? You should assume every place is Tahar, unless otherwise specified. Amar Rav Huna, Rebbe Rav Yeshua, Maila also before. Yes, but when it comes to the Parah Adruma, they did an extra Maila. They wanted to make sure, to the nth degree, that everything would be as Tahar as possible. And the reason is, it actually says, because after all, you have the Kula in it, you have the fact, we talked briefly yesterday, that they would be Matama the Kohen Gadol before he prepared the Parah Adruma. Either there would be, there's some I think the Rambam says there would be the Tamei Hem of the Sheret, somewhat on the forest and say they were just being hammered in by Pete and that people who weren't prepared for Parah Adruma would touch him. Anyway, then he would tovel because the din is the Parah Adruma can be prepared by somebody who is a tzvul yoim. The tzdukim held not. The tzdukim held that it has to be somebody who had a head of shemesh. So deliberately to go against the tzdukim, to demonstrate that they're wrong, they would deliberately have it done by the Kohen Gadol as a tzvul yoim. Once you have that kula, there's a real concern. People are going to think you can have other kulas with the Parah Adruma also, and therefore with everything else, they would be machmir to the utmost degree. So Rav Yochanan would answer, yes, it's true, call out Yisrael B'Jokai, but nevertheless, for purposes of Parah Adruma, we want to be extra careful, and therefore they would have this whole setup, this whole rigmarole over here to make sure. Then Rav Yechanan turns to Rav Shlokish and says, here, I have a contradiction for you. You're saying that all Eretz Yisrael is the Cheskas Tumah, and therefore if you want to be sure that a particular place is Tahar, then you need to check it. That's why you're saying you have to have the gap for the Parah Adruma. But a Braita says, Pam Achas Motu Asomis Belushkach Zira Ekim, one time they found bones in the, human bones, obviously, in the lishka, in the wood chamber of the Beit Hamikdash. You have one of the four big rooms by the corners of the Ezek Nashim over there, which meant storing wood for the Beit Hamikdash. So one time they found bones in there. Well, Biksha Ligdus from Al Yerushalayim. So the Chachamim figured, okay, we better declare Yerushalayim as Tomei to be on the safe side until we check it out. So Amud Rabbi Yeshua al-Raglav, so Rabbi Yeshua stands up on his feet. This is obviously while the second Beit Hamikdash was standing. So actually, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says this can't be Rabbi Yeshua, the Talmud of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai himself is still alive at the time. Why would his Talmud be Rabbi Yeshua be taking the lead of it? It has to be, he says, it must have been some earlier Rabbi Yeshua. Okay, anyway, so Rabbi Yeshua gets up on his feet, but Omar, he says, Loi Busho Klima Hilonu, isn't it an embarrassment and a shame for us, Shenigzer Tuma Al-Ir Abitenu, that we should declare that the city of our fathers is Tomei? And if you're worried about Mason, think of it. He says, Aye Mason Mabel, where are the Mason of the Mabel, where you find them in other places, but you don't find them over here. Aye Mason of Nesser, where are all the people you were mentioning before, people who were killed at the time of the Korban. Never mind the second Korban, that hadn't happened yet. The first Korban, yeah, Nebuchadnezzar and his army killed many people. A couple of weeks ago, Tisha B'Av, we were learning the Gemara over there on the Agadja over there on the Korban, where it mentioned that Wizard Adam killed millions of people, yeah. It may have been embedded in the dirt or whatever, and they didn't notice it, and now, like, they're digging in the dirt or whatever. And right, okay, so actually, you have Mephoshim. It's possible, but it's also, I think, some of the Mephoshim talk about what it is. Yes, you have those archways on top of archways underground, but obviously, you wouldn't necessarily have the floors directly above the top one, necessarily. You'd have a couple of inches of dirt between the top of the archway and the floor. So in those couple of inches of dirt, there may have been bones that at some point got embedded in there and they didn't notice. So, yeah, it's possible. Okay. Anyway, so Rabbi Yeshua says, Ayin Mason Mabel, Ayin Mason Nebuchadnezzar, where do you think all the people who were killed by Nebuchadnezzar? Or obviously they were all cleared away. So therefore, in other words, we have a chazaka that Yerushalayim is bothered, is checked and made sure that there's no human bones in here. Okay, so you find, well, that's what he's saying. If you find something, okay, then you find. But you're not going to say, in the topic, that your Yerushalayim is something. Now, the point is, Rabbi Yechanan says, maybe Ka'amahasi, since Rabbi Yeshua is saying like that, where are the Mason of the Marble and where are the Mason of Nebuchadnezzar? Lavla Memra, if he says, where are the Mason of the Marble? Lavla Memra, the Lahabu. Evidently, Rabbi Yeshua means by that, there weren't any Mason of the Marble here in Yerushalayim because the Marble didn't fall in Eretz Yisrael. So what are you telling me that the marble fell in Eretz Yisrael? According to that, then Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, is just like any place else. That's the answer. Well, if I may, so according to Yisvara, Harugin Nebuchadnezzar, Hazanavik Lehavu. What do you think? Rabbi Yechon means nobody was killed by Nebuchadnezzar? Obviously they were. Elahavu will come in. Obviously, even Rabbi Yechon would have to answer. It means, Rabbi Yeshua means, that there were people killed by Nebuchadnezzar, but they cleared it away afterwards. People came later and cleared away the bones and buried them where they're supposed to be buried. You could say the same thing over here when it comes to the marble. Havu Paninu, you could say that. Yes, there were masons in the marble, but then they cleared them away. The question is then, the question still is on the shortest. The Ahnu, Ha'ifnu, new, so if they clear them away, they clear them away. So therefore, so what's the, so you're still left with, why is the Shlokish saying, so if your Shlokish is pointing to the marble cell in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore Eretz Yisrael is just like every place else, but if they cleared them away, and your Shlokish has to agree with that, then yeah, then what's the problem? The answer is, Nehigi Isin Yerushalayim. Your Shlokish will answer, sure, the bones will clear away from Yerushalayim, because that's a place where you have to have a high level of Kedusha. Who says necessarily bones and remains were cleared away from the rest of Eretz Yisrael? The Paragama takes place on Har HaGeisim, which is outside Yerushalayim proper. So therefore, not necessarily in that sense, it's like the rest of Eretz Yisrael. The rest of Eretz Yisrael, says Rosh Lakish, is not necessarily Paragama. Given that, according to him, the marble fell in Eretz Yisrael as well, therefore you could well have remains of people from before the marble on Har HaGeisim, which is outside Yerushalayim. They wouldn't have been Bodhis yet, because they were only Bodhis Yerushalayim. That story with Rabbi Yeshua is only regarding Yerushalayim. So therefore, he says that's why they would have to check this particular area and clean it out thoroughly and make sure that's suitable for the Paragama. Yerushalayim is the old city, is basically the old city. So it is. I mean, you have the Har HaBayis of the mountain. You have the original old city of Yerushalayim is a slope downward from that mountain. Nowadays, you have tours of it, Ir David, where you have the Shaloyach tunnel and all that. Eventually it spread westward and included the area that's now the Jewish quarter and the Armenian quarter and Halcyon and whatever, and eventually it spread even further north than that also, but whatever, the point is that then you have, then going east from that, you have it drop down to Nahal Kidron and comes up on the other side to Har HaGeisim. So that's already outside the city of Yerushalayim. So Rish Lakish would say that so Rav Yechanan is arguing the whole out of Yisrael is Badrach. Rish Lakish said, from this story, you don't have any proof of that. All you know is Yerushalayim is Badrach. They didn't necessarily clear away any mason from the rest of Eretz
Yisrael. Yes.
Yeah, it's just beyond Har HaBayis.
It's a big cup. How deep is it?
It's fairly, I don't know how deep exactly, but whatever. I have no idea. It's also changed, and yeah, the topography has changed a lot since then. Yeah. And the you know how deep it goes from the top to the bottom. People are not on the board of it. Okay, you know what the Radva, I don't know what it is, but you know what the Radvaz has in one of the Shuvahs anyway, that at various times the Goyim has attacked the physical surface of the Har HaBayis and lowered it and whatever, and he explains that's why nowadays the highest surface of the Har HaBayis is somewhat lower than the highest point in the old city. Where it should be the other way around, by rights, it should be higher, but that's because the Romans, the Arabs, or who knows, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, for example, he says, if you assume that, they're not bad, right, in one of the children. He mentions, for example, if we assume that the rock inside the Dome of the Rock is the Evid Shtia, which is what's generally accepted, then the Gemara tells us, the Mishnah in Yuma tells us that it stuck up, that it stuck only three etzbois above the surface of the floor of the Azara, whereas nowadays it's much higher above the surface. So that's why, because they get chiseled into the rocks and whatever, so therefore, yeah. So the whole topography has changed. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's above the floor of the Dome of the Rock. Exactly right. All right, let's go on. Okay. Ikadamri, another version of this last discussion is like this. That's the first version is Rabbi Yochanan is using this story about the bones in the Lishkas Dira Eitzim as a question to Rish Lakish, that it seems from the story that Eretz Yisrael is Baruch, that they took away that there's no Mason marble, and that any Mason of Ochanesa they cleared away. And Rish Lakish is answering him, fine, they cleared him away from Yerushalayim, not necessarily the rest of the city. Ikadamri, version number two, Eitzim Rish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan. According to the second version, it's the other way around. Rish Lakish asks Rabbi Yochanan on the basis of this Braisa. If Rabbi Yeshua is saying, I am Mason, Ruchameser, if he's saying, so where are the Mason and the Mabel? Where are the Mason from the Ruchameser? My lab, so Rav Shlokish would understand the story as follows. Midahani Habu, since the Mason and Ruchameser is a factual thing, we know it existed, the Ruchameser and his soldiers killed lots of people over there. Hani Nami Habu, then presumably Rabbi Yeshua means that Mason Mabul were also there. In other words, that the Mabul fell in Eretz Yisrael just as it did everywhere else. And because if he's mentioning Ayah Mason Mabul, Ayah Mason Ruchameser, so what does he mean by Ayah Mason Ruchameser? He doesn't mean they didn't exist, obviously. He means that the Mason that Ruchameser killed were cleared away afterwards and buried. So also, Ayah Mason Mabul would mean there was a Mabul over here. People were killed in the Mabul, and their bones were embedded into the dirt, but afterwards they were cleared away. So then, in that case, that shows that the Mabul fell in Eretz Yisrael. What kind of a question is that? Like we said before in the first version, like Rabbi Yochanan understood in the first version, each one is its own kind of thing. Aye meitei mabul means there were no meitei mabul over here because the mabul didn't fall in Eretz Yisrael. Aye meitei ruchanetze means there were, of course, meitei ruchanetze, but they were cleared away. So Rabbi Yochanan wouldn't find that to be a contradiction. Okay. Next he asks him, next Rabbi Yochanan asks Rish Lakish, here's another thing I have, a contradiction to you. The prophet describes that a mabul, mikol asher b'charov ha-meitei. Everything that was on the dry land died. What dry land? How is it dry land during the mabul? Bishlem l'didi, so it's sort of according to me, damino yoran mabul l'Eretz Yisrael. Oh, sorry, this is Rish Lakish saying. That Rish Lakish is saying that I who hold the mabul fell on Eretz Yisrael, shum shum hafi meitei. So that's why the people in Eretz Yisrael died, because they were destroyed by the mabul also. El Lidach, but according to you, Rabbi Yochanan, if the mabul didn't fall in Eretz Yisrael, am I meitei, and why'd they die? And the answer is Mishum Hevla. Rabbi Yochanan would understand that they died because of the heat, because of the hot air. You had, as I want to say, the mabul was boiling water, so there's boiling rain or boiling... The point is that the mabul, which fell in the rest of the world, It affected the climate of Eretz Yisrael also, to the extent that the people of Eretz Yisrael were killed by the global warming. Kidur of Chista, and this is like what Rav Chista says, the Omer of Chista, Veroistchen Kilkalu, the people of the Jordan Mabul sinned with roistchen, with boiling. So Rashi mentions in Sanhedrin, not over here, but in Sanhedrin, that roistchen means that in particular, one of the big avedas they were guilty of was Moshe Zerel of Atala, which comes out very hot. So it comes out hot from the bottom. Therefore, they sinned with roistchen over roistchen to Donu, and they were judged and they were punished also using boiling water. And we know that the marble was boiling, because when the marble was described that after you had the 40 days of rain and 150 days of the water surging, afterwards, the water calmed down. What does calm down mean? You have a Megillat Esther, the anger of the king calmed down. So we see that the Shurish, Shin Bob Chof, whatever the exact Shurish is, has to do with something hot cooling down, hot anger cooling down, and in this case, hot water cooling down. So we see from that, mabul was boiling water. Therefore, it says Rabbi Yochanan, yes, the actual water of the mabul didn't fall in Eretz Yisrael, but the heat that it brought about in the rest of the world also affected the climate of Eretz Yisrael, so the people died from that. But the point is, it was a bit more of an orderly kind of thing, so it wasn't like their bones are being ground into the dirt over there, and therefore, you never know, you could go anywhere in Eretz Yisrael and you could conceivably find one of them. They died in a more orderly way, and therefore, their relatives or whoever were able to bury them in a more orderly way. So you have particular...
What relatives?
You know, it's not like everybody died all at once. You have some people, the weaker people die all first, and then the stronger people, okay, so you're going to have the few survivors, maybe, okay, you have to worry about, but you're not going to have the whole Eretz Yisrael, you're not going to declare, might be chummy because of the couple, the last couple of hardy people who were the last ones to die. No, but the point is, according to the Vyachan, and the mabul didn't fall in Eretz Yisrael, but yeah, you have it, the whole rest of the world is full of boiling hot water and steam and vapor and whatever, then that affected the climate of Eretz Yisrael also, and it made it too hot for people to be able to live, yeah. Well, the lois could have just means boiling water. Yeah, probably too hot, but I don't know. You have it. That's also possible. I mean, you have also Gemara and Edrin, actually, that mentions that you have the various hot springs, including Chamis Veria, are left over from the marble. So hot springs aren't necessarily 212 either. Hot springs can be, I don't know, like hot springs of all different, yeah, they're all kinds of hot. They're all kinds, but yeah. Okay.
There's a boiling river somewhere, I can see.
Alright, so the point is, so Rabbi Yochanan doesn't have a problem that the people in Eretz Yisrael died because they died from the heaven. From the atmosphere. Ikadamri, again, another version of this last part of the discussion, is the other way around. Eitzpe Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, that according to the second version, it's the other way around. Rabbi Yochanan asks Rish Lakish, how do you understand the pasuk Mikol Asher B'Charov Omeis, who everything that was on dry land died? Dishleim L'Didi, according to me, that I hold down in the Lo Yoder Mabul Eretz Yisrael, Mishum Hafi HaB'Charov. That explains how there's dry land that we can say, that everything that was on the dry land, even though the land itself is dry, they died from the heat, from the atmosphere. El Lidach Mai Charova, but according to you, what do you mean that is everything that was on the dry land? What dry land? According to the Shlok,
everything was
underwater. The answer is Choroba Shahoyt Me'ikra. The Shlok is what answered. The word Choroba in that prophet means the areas that previously were dry land. Yeah, in other words, everything that previously was dry land is now being, including Eretz Yisrael, according to the Shlok, is now being covered by the water of the marble and the people, and the people and all their creatures die off. So then we have to ask in that case, why does the pasuk need to mention the dry land if everything's underwater anyway? Then what's the difference? The reason is because Rav Chista. That teaches us what Rav Chista says. So Amr Rav Chista, v'dur ha-mabul le-nigzir ha-gzera al-dogim shebayam. When it came to the dur ha-mabul, the gzera was not on the fish in the sea. So that's why the pasuk stresses b'charova, that only the creatures that lived on dry land were affected, but not the ones in the sea. So because the prophet says everything that was in dry land died, not the fish in the sea. Which doesn't mean, by the way, that every single fish survived. In fact, some individual fish or school of fish may have been killed by it. The Reverend Miller mentions in one of his Tvarim, he mentions that you find sometimes archaeologists will find, the paleontologists, whatever, will find on top of the high mountains, I think even like on the top of Mount Everest or something, they'll find fossils of fishes. Mesame, you had individual schools of fish that got caught in the Bible.
Wrote
about boiling water, how did the fish get caught?
Right. Exactly.
So there's a couple of problems. No, it's a good question. If the water was boiling, then how did the fish not get cooked? How did the fish survive? So you have a couple of possibilities. Maushar says maybe what the Gemara means is that the boiling water, that the Eibishter made it, that the boiling water is only where there was dry land, did the water become boiling. Where it was water to begin with, then the Ramban on Chumash gives two other possibilities based on the Drashim. One is he says that the fish all moved temporarily to the middle of the ocean. The water is falling on the dry land, not necessarily raining in the middle of the ocean. So therefore, by the time the boiling water reaches the ocean, it'll have been cooled off enough. It'll mix with the ocean water and cooled off enough. Yeah, but by the time it gets to the middle of the ocean, it'll cooled off enough that, yeah.
So
the fish would have left the individual bodies of water, the Mediterranean or Lake this or whatever, yeah, and then moved into the ocean. And therefore, the other possibility that Amban brings from another medrash is that only the upper layer of the water was boiling. Far below the surface, it was still the regular temperature. Hot heat rises. Even nowadays, you have like a pool, for example, with hot water. The further down, it'll tend to be cooler. That's by Yabasha. We're talking about over here the fish in the sea. So therefore, when it came to the fish in the sea, only the top layer of the water needs to be boiling. The rest of it. Yeah, it was boiling, and then further down, once you get, I mean, in some places, the ocean is tens of thousands of feet deep. Yeah, it didn't have to be boiling all the way down. It would have had boiling top to bottom. Okay. All right. Fine. Yeah, you have places in the ocean that are 3,000 feet deep. Yeah. No. Yeah. Look it up sometime. Mariana Trench, for example, a place near the Philippines, I think. It's like 35,000 feet deep or something. Yeah. No. Okay. Onward. Okay. Onward. Okay. Come on. Continues the Gemara. Bishleim alamanda amal la yored marble la Yisrael. I can understand according to Rabbi Yechanan, who says the marble did not fall in Eretz Yisrael. That explains how you become Rema. That explains that the Re'aim was able to stay in Eretz Yisrael and survive. The Re'aim is some kind of giant creature, as we're going to have in a second. No, you have a, there's a story in the Medrash that, that David HaMelech one time was, he climbs up a little hill and he doesn't realize he's sleeping Re'eim, and all of a sudden he finds himself on top of a gigantic horn high up in the area, and the kind of Re'eim on Sunny, he says until, yeah. But the point is, as I was going to say in a second, the Re'eim is a giant animal, it wouldn't have fit in the table.
For
dinosaur was, but the, no, because the Gemara is saying that it survived the marble, but that, anyway, the point is, we know, okay, so whatever it is, if you're going to say that the marble didn't fall in Eretz Yisrael, that explains how the Re'eim survived. It hung out in Eretz Yisrael. Tosfos says, what about the Hevel that we just said? The answer is that the Re'eim is a big enough, strong enough animal that the Hevel wouldn't have bothered it too much. It would have been able to survive
even.
What? Yeah. Okay, so that explains that. But according to the Shlokish, the marble fell everywhere, even in Eretz Yisrael. Reima, hey, come, where did the Re'eim stand? Where did it hang out? It's a big, gigantic creature. It wouldn't have fit in the table. According to the Shlokish, there's no safe haven, because even Eretz Yisrael is being drowned by the marble. So where did the Re'eim? Where did the Re'eim live? That means that we have Re'eim in there. Yeah. Okay. Amr Rav Yana, Guriyah Sichnista Bateh. So Rav Yana says, it's very simple. They didn't pick a full-size Re'eim, they took a baby Re'eim. And baby Re'eim will fit. The question is, what are you telling me that a baby Re'eim will fit? Well, Amr Rav Baba Chana, but we have one of the famous Rav Baba Chana stories that we had in Baba Basra. The Yidi Chazili Urzila de Re'ema Bat Yoyma. He says, I personally saw a baby Re'eim. I personally saw a baby Re'eim, Bas Yoma, that was a day old. Rashi brings over here a Girsa that says Uzila de Yama, which means a Re'eim of the sea, meaning not a sea creature, but rather one that was next to the sea. It was on the shore, standing on the shore next to the sea.
A baby.
Church just discusses a little bit, if we say de Yama, do we mean a sea creature? No, because we just said the sea creatures weren't affected by the marble. So it has to be a land animal. Tosfos also gets into the interesting question. In their times, they used to translate the word Re'eim, and you have the word Re'eim a number of times in Tanakh. You have, besides, we count Re'eim money sonnies and children, you have Kisoyachos Re'eim Loi in Bilam's Brachos, you have a whole passage about the Re'eim in Sefer Iyov. Tosfos mentions that in their times, they used to explain the word Re'eim as a buffalo. So Tosfos discusses, can that be correct? No. First of all, because it's nowhere near the size, as the Gemara is going to say now, of the Re'eim. It's not nearly that big. It would have fit comfortably into the paper. Second of all, Tosfos says also that a Re'eim is, a buffalo is an animal that can be domesticated, or at least tamed. You can use it for farm work. Where you find in Eos over there, where it describes the Re'eim, it specifically says that it's a wild animal that cannot be tamed and can't be used for farm work. So it can't be that a Re'eim is a buffalo. The Nachmina of that Tosfos says is therefore means, if we were to say that it's a Re'eim, then it would mean a Re'eim is a wild animal. It's actually one of the, in this week's parasha, it mentions you have the three domestic animals, Shur, Seikvotim, and Seyudim, and then you have seven wild animals, Ayo, Yachmu, Akhredish, and Tereva Zomer. If you say that a Re'eim is one of the wild animals, it would mean a Chela would be Mutter. So fine, the Re'eim is a wild animal, but if you say that the Re'eim is a buffalo, it would mean the chalav of a buffalo would be mutter, but Tosfos says no. Based on that, we can't say that. A buffalo has to be considered some type of domestic animal, and like with any other domestic animal, again, Tosfos is saying, because you can't. You're thinking of buffalo like American bison. Those are wild animals. Tosfos isn't talking about those. America wasn't discovered yet. Tosfos is talking about like old world buffalo, water buffalo, whatever. So those kind, yes, they can be domesticated or at least tamed. So those, they're kosher, they have split hooves and they chew their cud, but their chalev would be awful. So therefore, now the bottom line is, they, and also the post can talk about another nafkin, you know, would be as far as kisi adam. So therefore, the halacha is, if a person shechs a buffalo, they do have to do kisi adam mistopik, because even though Tosfos is discussing over here the buffalo, whether the buffalo is a chaya or a behemoth, it's not necessarily so clear cut, and you can't eat its chalev, again, for the same reason, because of the suffix. Okay. Getting back to the Gemara. That's what Tosfos is saying. That's one reason why the Re'eim can't be a buffalo based on the Gemara over here. Okay. Okay, maybe. I personally saw a baby Re'eim, a day old, according to Rashi, was standing by the Satayam, was standing by the seashore. Vahavik Kahar Tover, it was the size of Har Tover. Vahar Tover Kamahavia, how big is Har Tover? A Boyan Parsi, it's 40 Parsa. A Parsa is about 2.5-3 miles, so you're talking like a 100 near you, you're talking like over 100 miles. Mishcha the Savre Tlota Parsi, the length of its neck is 3 Parsa. Marabasa Duresha, the area that it would have to, that it would lay its head down on the ground, is 1.5 Parsa. And this animal was so big, Roma Kava, it ejected some waste, it produced waste, the Socha Yardana, and with that, with its waste, it stopped up the Yardana, until eventually it dissolved. What? Ah, so, okay. So actually, Ben Yoyoda points out that we know that all these stories in Baba Basra over there, Rabba Baba Chana, including this one, are all not meant literally. They're meant as a mushal. They're meant as a mushal for some deep concept or other. When we learned it in Baba Basra, we talked about a number of approaches and a Mephoshim take on it. So what is the Gemara asking over here that a rain is so big it couldn't fit in the table? The obvious answer should be the whole thing is a mushal. So he says that actually you're right. The Gemara is not asking it as a serious objection. The Gemara is asking it, lahago perdo lahadira. You're supposed to. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos that when a person comes in front of the base of Shomaila, one of the questions he's asked is, Pilpalta Batura, did you do Pilpul in Tura? So he says this is an example of that. Pilpul doesn't mean like what we usually think of as Pilpul, like tying together 20 different things. But yeah, it means, in other words, deep discussion in Tura. So like over here, in other words, Ben Yahoyada says, that's what it means, in other words, over here. The Gemara could have easily deflected it and say, never mind, the whole thing is a marshal, but we're expected to even, to be mouthful, to take the ideas in Tura and delve into them and try and reconcile them where we can. Okay, so the question is, if the aim is that big, then how does it fit in the tape? Okay. No. Ela roish choitma hichnisu l'tape. Amar Rav Yechanan Roshe into the table. So Rav Yechanan answers, okay, they didn't put the whole thing into the table, just its head stuck into the table. No, the head is sticking in and the body is staying outside the table. Hold on. Didn't we just say that just the area for it to lay its head is a parasa and a half, and the table is only 300 amas long? Ella Roish Choitma into the table. Okay, so you have to answer, they just stuck the tip of its nose into the table so it could breathe normal air, but the rest of it was outside the table. Question is, Rav Yechanan lo yorad mabel. Now, Rav Yechanan is the one who's saying this, that they stuck the nose in. So the question is, Rav Yechanan lo yorad mabel Eretz Yisrael. Rav Yechanan himself is saying the mabel never fell in Eretz Yisrael. So according to him, why did it have to stick the nose of the rain into the table? The answer is the Gibber of Shlokish Kamer. Rav Yechanan is not answering the question. He would say, my own shit is, the marvel didn't fall in Eretz Yisrael, and their aim is a big enough animal that the hevel won't affect it, therefore no problem. A herd of them could survive there in Eretz Yisrael. But a Shlokish who holds the marvel have fell in Eretz Yisrael, he will have to say that they had the nose of it sticking into the table. Wait. You're wondering because the water is boiling. Wait just a second. The Gemara has already anticipated that. Hold on. The question is, Bahakasagia Teva, the Teva itself is moving. Sometimes it's higher, sometimes it's lower. The waves are tossing it around. Or you have also, that's one way of understanding the question. One of the other Mephoshim, I think, the Ponim Neiris, says another point also. He says, never mind that. You have, again, some parts of the ocean are shallower, some parts are deeper, so wherever the Teva is going, fine. Sometimes the Re'em can walk on the seabed alongside the Teva, but other times when the water is deeper, what is it going to have to do? Swim for months at a time. That's the question. The question is, the Teva is constantly moving and up and down, so its nose, even if its nose is stuck into the Teva, it's going to end up falling out. The answer is, Amar Shlokish, pound of kosher to the Teva. The Shlokish answer is, they tied spoons to the Teva. So that way, the head stays where it's supposed to, and it doesn't get moved away. Once its spoons are tied to the Teva, then they're full. I don't know, but the point is, so you have to be careful, obviously, right. Ultimately, it was a net. So, yeah. The question is, what about the boiling water? So how does the rain last for a whole year in boiling water? The whole marble from beginning to end took a year. In 40 days, the rain fell. Then you have 150 days the water is churning. Then it starts gradually evaporating, but it still took time. It took a long time until it all evaporated and the ground is dry. Yeah, no, but even afterwards, the whole 150 days, by Yigru Amayimalar, it's only after that, by Yashoku Amoyim, the starts calming down and cooling more. Fine, so you're not talking a whole year, you're talking a half a year, but still, the point is, yeah. The answer is, the Gemara says, Nu, according to your own Svara, that you're asking the question, you have to ask yourself, Teva Hechisagya. Never mind that, you have to ask yourself the question. The Teva was coated with tar on the inside and outside, you buy it from the Kutzba Koker, it would have melted it, right? So obviously you have to say that something was, that the Edusha did something to avoid that problem. But Oid, and besides, you have another point also. Oid Melech HaBoshen, hey, Kako, you have to ask the same question. We know that Oid Melech HaBoshen survived the Mabul. So again, according to the Yechanan, he could have run away to Israel. But according to the Shlokish, that which is who we're dealing with according to over here, that the Mabul fell in Israel also. So there's no safe haven except in the paper. And Oid doesn't fit in the paper. So We know the Gemara in Brachos that says that Moshe was 10 amas tall, and he took a 10 amas tall axe and jumped 10 amas and hit Oeg in the ankle. Again, not necessarily is that Gemara meant literally. It may be metaphorical, though Maral, for example, takes it metaphorically. If you say it's literal, I had a 6th grade Rebbe, Shlomo Zalman Mendelssohn, all of us Shalom, who calculated based on the proportions of a person, that would mean that Oeg was over 1,000 feet tall. Okay, anyway, the point is, whatever it was, even if we don't take that Gemara literally, the point is we know that Oeg was a giant, that he wouldn't have fit in the Teva either. Necessarily, he's also next to the Teva. So then the question is, what did he do as far as the boiling water? Ella, you have to answer, Nes Nasalem, and Nes happened to them, Shinik Spanen over Siriyat Teva. The water was cool next to the Teva. That's how the tar on the Teva didn't melt, and that is how Oeg and the Re'im were able to stand in the water. Which means, by the way, therefore, so according to, so Rashi says over here, that means the Re'im didn't actually need the Teva. Which sounds like, and some of the Mephoshim understand Rashi to be saying this, that according to this last answer, once we say the water is cool around the Teva, means that we don't have to go through this whole thing anymore that they tied the Re'im's horns to the Teva and have its nose sticking into the Teva or whatever. It can be swimming along or swimming or walking alongside the Teva and not have a problem. It's a net, that was saying. They bring an interesting vote from Rav Meir Shapiro of Drush on this Gemara over here about how the Re'im survived. He says the Gemara is also hinting at how do the Jewish people survive in Golos? We Jewish people have a comparison to a Re'im. It's the greatest of all animals. It's like we're the greatest of all nations. So then how do you survive? How do you survive? They're the Mayim Rabim of the Mabul. So the first answer is you bring babies into the Teva. Make sure that you have the little kinderlach are going to Cheder, are in the Beit Medrash, learning in an atmosphere of Torah, and that works out. Fine, all very good, but what about the one that's next to the Yam, the one that's on the verge of assimilation, living among the Goyim? How do we save them? So the answer is we said, okay, at least make sure the head is in the favor. At least make sure the head of the kid is in the right place. So we say, but what about, what if the head doesn't fit? Like we're saying, parasol palga, like you can have the people who are half here, half there. So the answer is, okay, make sure at least his nose is in the favor. At least make sure that the kid is breathing an atmosphere of Yiddishkeit. That at least will be. So then we asked, okay, and what happens though the Teva itself is pitching up and down, the Beit Medrash itself, the Jewish society itself is going to fall apart under the pressure of the Goyim, what do we do? So the answer is, town of Kosher of the Teva, you have to have the horns representing the people who support learning, who support Torah learning with their money, that has to be tied to the Teva. That makes sure that everything keeps on existing, and that's that the Reim can continue to exist. He didn't douse him.
What's the phrase in Hebrew?
With the horns? Is that the horns represent the people, the people who support learning with their money, with their finances, yeah. Okay.
All right.
I forgot to mention before, by the way, the Ponim Me'iris says an interesting thing. According to Rabbi Yochanan, the Pesukim by the Mabul, first by the Mabul it describes, afterwards it starts describing how the water, how the rain, the Mabul fell for 40 days, and it says that everything died, by Yidva Kobosa, Rengas Alaoretz, Ba'ois, Ba'behemo, Ba'chaya, and all the people. Then a few Pesukim later, it also mentions that everything was destroyed, but it doesn't mention Chaya in that second part. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, that's why. Because according to Rabbi Yochanan, you don't need this whole thing of the aim being tied to the Teva and all. It could live in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, the second time when it mentions all the creatures being destroyed, it leaves out the Chaya to hint that the aim was able to survive. It, not all the Chayas on the land were wiped out because the aim being a Chaya was able to live in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Getting back to the Gemara. So the question is, Ulur Shimon ben Lakish, going back to Rish Lakish, Nihi Nami Diyorad Mabul Eretz Yisrael. Fine. So we're saying the whole point of the Sugya so far is Rish Lakish is saying the Mabul fell in Eretz Yisrael, therefore you can have bones and remains and whatever embedded in the dirt over there, and that's why you need a Mokum Abodah. The question is, that's why you need, for the Paraduma, you need a particular area that was checked and then made sure that there's nothing in it. The question is, though, the whole is posh. But everything that fine, everything was destroyed and embedded into the dirt by the marble, but it didn't remain there. Eretz Yisrael is higher than the surrounding countries. When things get dissolved or carried along in water, they go to lower places. Jomer Rish Lakish, Rish Lakish himself says, Lama Nikra Shema Metzula, why is Bavel called Metzula, which means the deep, Metzula means the depth. Chakom Mesed Mabul Mitzalalusham, because all the Mesed and the Mabul were all dumped, were all went down into the depths of it, because Babel is a very low place, and therefore, geographically, right, so therefore, so when the Mabul water is draining, and drains towards Babel, and therefore all the Mesed ended up over there. But Rav Yechanan, and Rav Yechanan says the same thing but in a different way. Lama nikra shmo Shinar. Why is Babel also called Shinar? As we find in Parashat Noach, for example, why is it called Shinar? It's called Meise Mabel Min Arusham, because all the Meise and the Mabel were shaken out over there. Shinar Meloshin shaking out, Meloshin Nahar shaking, yeah. So therefore, the point is, what do you mean? According to the Shlokish, even if the marble fell in Eretz Yisrael, but all the bones and everything is washed away to Babel. The answer is, but inevitably something must have gotten stuck to the ground over there and remained behind. Therefore, he's concerned about it. Amr Rav Abo says in this connection, another explanation why Babel is called Shinar, Loma Nikra Shmo Shinar, Shemana Eretz Ashireha, because it shakes out its rich people. In other words, you have rich people in Babel, but they very soon lose their wealth. Now, why is that? Rashi mentions on the basis of a Gemara in Beta that says that the rich Jews of Babel were not Bali Tzedakah. In fact, the Gemara says over there very sharply, it says on them, Yerja Gehenim. They're destined to go down to Gehenim because they don't have Rachmanos, so they don't give proper Tzedakah. So therefore they lose their fortune. Yeah. Marshall gives a different reason. Marshall mentions on the basis of Gemara, I think in Yoma, that says that if all the Jewish people had come up from Babel to build the second Mishkan, then they would have been unshakable. Nobody would have ever been able to attack them. But since they didn't, then therefore there's a letter, as a Pesuk in Shir HaShirim, they're like Luach Erez, they're like a cedar panel which eventually rots away. So like here you have the wealthy Jews of Babel, eventually their fortune rots away. According to Marsha, if they come to Eretz Yisrael, then they, yeah. I guess that's the idea, yeah. So the question is, what do you mean? We see that there are rich people in Babel. The answer is, yes, but their fortune never lasts throughout three generations. You'll have a rich person, you'll have a rich Yid in Babel, and his son will be rich, but already his grandson, his grandchildren will. Further on this topic, that we said that all the Mesim and everything in the marble was all drained out to Babel, anybody who eats from the soil of Babel, and why would you eat soil? It has certain nutrients, and I mean nowadays they get certain antibiotics from soil, but also it has sometimes nowadays a person has a vitamin deficiency, they feel like this odd need to eat dirt or whatever. So they have sometimes for medicinal purposes. Yeah. Anyway, so somebody who eats the dust of Babel, kilo oichob saravoisa. This is if he's eating the flesh of his ancestors. Meaning, because, so on the face of it, it would mean the mason of Babel. But Marsha says it can't mean that. Yeah, he eats the dust of Babel. That's what I was just saying. I just said that you have sometimes it can be useful for medicinal purposes, well, said because it has antibiotic properties or whatever, or sometimes it can be a person has a vitamin deficiency. Look it up sometimes. Pica. You know medical terms. You have a condition called pica where a person is suffering from some kind of dietary deficiency and therefore they feel this odd need to eat dirt. Yeah. They're not certain minerals in any of them. Anyway. So the point is that if a person eats the dust of Babel, kilo oichob sala voisa. This is if he's eating the flesh of his ancestors. Now, what ancestors? On the face of it, it should mean the people from the Mabel who were drained out there, like we were just saying. The problem is, Marsha says that you can't call them our ancestors. We're not descendants from the people who were killed in the Mabel. We're descendants from Noach. So therefore, sala voisa, Rashi mentions in the Gemara, this Gemara is also in Shabbos, Rashi mentions over here, it means our Jewish ancestors were buried over centuries in Babel, because Jewish people lived there for so many centuries, and therefore you have, there's enough of them mixed into the dirt, that's it. Right, but that's the point. We can't say a voice of on the people of Mabel, right? We learn similarly in the Bible. Some say it's like he's eating creepy, cool, and disgusting creatures because those came from the marble when they were drained over there. That's why we're bringing this in over here. We're not bringing it in primarily because of our voice stuff, because that's a different matter. We're mentioning because, again, all of the animals and all of the bugs. No, well, they, again, they were all drained out in the bubble when they're because it's lower, because it's lower than the surrounding country. So everything drained over there. So therefore, now you have the earth is made up of their remains and therefore. Okay. Thus far, the Agavta, now getting back to the Halacha and the topic of our Mishnah. We said in the Mishnah that if a person shechs or burns the part of Adruma outside of the place where it's supposed to be, it's not Chayiv Koris for that, that led us into this whole discussion. It's supposed to be outside of this Mishnah, right, but we said even if he does it in the wrong place, he does it outside of the gap, outside of that hole in the ground where it's supposed to be done, then nevertheless, it's still possible because the fact is it's not a Korban. Then the Mishnah had all this. It's not a carbon. It's a different kind of thing. Chassas kari rachmano. The Pasuk calls it a chassas. And it has, for certain purposes, it has certain dinim of a carbon. But for the most part, it's considered kosher bedekabat. Okay. The Mishnah mentions sur la mishaleach, the sur la zozel, but the same thing if a person shechs it outside of the smith, which is not chayav koris, because again, it's not meant to be brought to the carbon. So what does it mean? You have a contradiction. We learn in a braita that when the pasuk says that a person didn't bring a korban, when the pasuk talks about over there in the parasha of Shvutetos, that a person shechted or offered a korban outside of the Mikdash, so when it says oy korban, when it says over there that he brought a korban, actually what it says is ashir yishchat shor oy kesev oy eiz b'machne oy ashir yishchat mechutz b'machne, and he didn't bring another korban. So, you would think, from the word korban, you would think maybe it even means kodshe bedekabayis, if you have, for example, an animal that a person designated to go with, that the animal itself, or its value, is going to go to the treasury of the Beis Hamikdash, for the upkeep of the Beis Hamikdash, shenikru korban, and such things can also be called a korban, shenemar, as we find in the Pasuk in Parshas Maaseh, after they had the war against Midian over there, so the leaders of the army come to Moshe, and they say, we want to bring a korban, we're going to take all the gold ornaments that we captured from the Midian, that we took as spoils from the Midianim, and we're going to bring it as an offering to the Beis Mikdash. Now that's not a korban, it's not brought on the Beis Mikdash, it's a korban, as in kodesh bedekabayis, it goes to the treasury of the Mishkan. Shenemar, but actually the korban Hashem. It says that we're offering the korban of Hashem. So if it only said over here korban, you would think it applies to Bedek HaBayis as well. Therefore, note, the pasuk continues that he didn't bring it to Pesach Oyomoyed, implying Misharoi Lover Oyomoyed. So it only applies to something that is meant to be brought to the Oyomoyed as a korban. Yotu, Kodshe Bedek HaBayis, Shein and Ruyin, as opposed to Kodshe Bedek HaBayis, are not meant to be brought as a korban. They're not suitable for a korban. Now, why are they not suitable for a korban? Rashi brings two reasons. He brings first of all from his rebellion, that the reason is because you're not supposed to be makdish an animal that's tomim for bedek abayim. There's actually an esser not to do that. If you have an animal that's a tumim and you want to be makdashit, you're supposed to be makdashit for kedushas mizbeach. So to actually be brought as a korban. So therefore, what kind of animal is typically being donated to bedek habayis? It's one that has a mum. It has a mum. It's not suitable to be brought as a korban. That's one explanation. Then Rashi says, in the context of our sugya, what it would mean is, never mind that. Even if the animal is a tumim, even if it doesn't have a mum, and a person was over on that essay and was makdashit the bedek habayis, nevertheless, the bottom line is it's meant for the bedek habayis. It's not meant to be brought as a korban. The Torah Adrum, after all, by definition, doesn't have a mum, at least Torah Adrum was smimashein b'mum, and yet we said in the Mishnah that a person is potter for it, so he would be the same thing. Tosfos discusses, though, Rashi's proof, though, Tosfos says, is not really that strong proof. The difference is that the Parah Adruma is not at all meant for the Mizbeah. Makdish Tanimim Lebedek Abayis, after all, either the animal itself or its monetary value is going to end up being brought to the carbon. So, okay, anyway. So it's not exactly the same thing, Tosfos says that. Okay, anyway, the point is, so Yotzei Kodesh Lebedek Abayis Shein Ruyin continues the price. The Oitzias Elu Shein Ruyin, fine, so far then that tells us to exclude kosher bedek habayis because they're not suitable to be brought to the korban for the reasons we just said. On the other hand, we would think we should not be excluding the third mishtalayach, the third lazozel, because after all, that is suitable to be brought in front of the oyel moed, because after all, it is an animal that's tumim, and you have to begin with, you have two goats. One of them is going to be lashem, one of them is going to be lazozel. You don't know to begin with which one is going to be. And you're going to be bringing it into the Azara to do the girdle and everything. So you would think, therefore, that if a person checks the Sarim Eshaleach outside of this Mikdash, he should be Chayav. Talmud Lomar, LaHashem, therefore, the passage continues that he didn't bring a korban to Hashem, LaHoytzi, Sarim Eshaleach, Shein Yochad LaHashem, which excludes the Sarim Eshaleach, which is not meant to be brought for Hashem. It's meant to be thrown off LaAzara. So the point is that we seem to have a contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braith. That both the Mishnah and the Braisa are saying that the Sarim HaShaleach person is not chayav for. But our Mishnah learned that from the word Ve'al Pesach HaYomayid, and the Braisa says that's not good enough, because the Sarim HaShaleach does go in front of Pesach HaYomayid for the girdle. Rather, we have to learn it from Lashem. The contradiction is, where are we learning the din from? One is it Pesach HaYomayid as in the Mishnah, or is it Lashem as in the Braisa? You have a different girsa over here. You can see on the side over here in the margin between the Gemara and Rashi, you can see that you have another girsa is the other way around. The Braisa is saying the word Lashem is Lazavay Sarah Mashalayah. That I'm just the opposite. I'm on the side of it. You're right opposite where it says Vahoti Sarah Mashalayah. Sarah Machayim Lazavay. So then according to that, it comes out then the contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa is something else. You have the Mishnah is saying that a person is Potter for Shechting Sarah Mashalayah. The Braisa is saying he's Chayim. So then you have a contradiction. Not just like the gears that we have over here, a contradiction where you learn the din from, but according to this gears, you have a contradiction in the actual result. Yeah, what the actual din is. Is he chayev or not? The answer is, by Tasha, it's not a contradiction. Kam kodim hagrola, kam la'acha hagrola. One is before the girdle is done. The other one is after the girdle is done. Before the girdle is done, sure, it's meant to be brought into oil mode, because it has to be brought, both animals have to be there by the kohen gadol for him to do the girdle and put one la'ashem and one la'azazel. After the Hagrola, then it's not meant to come into the Oil Moed anymore. So the Braisa that's saying that he's Potter on the grounds of Lashem is even before the Hagrola is done, if he were to shechter at that point, he'd be Potter. It could have been the Sarah Lashem, but nevertheless he's Potter because it's not going to be brought to the carbon, because ultimately it turns out to be the Sarah Lazov. The Mishnah that says that we learn from Pesach Oil Moed is talking about after the Girdle, because at that point it's no longer meant to come Lefnei Pesach Oil Moed. According to the other Jews, so what we mean is, before the Hagrola, he would be Chayev, because at that point, it could conceivably end up being the Sarah Lashem, so it was depending which one the girdle Lashem lands on, and after Hagrola, we know already it's been definitive, this one is now the Sarah Lazogol, and therefore, okay, the question is, after Hagrola, Nami, how you put Vidri? Okay, but after the, so what, after the girdle, you still need the Vidri, the Sarah Lazogol still needs to be in the Azara, for the Kohen Gadol to do Vidri on it, to do Smicha and Vidri on it, before he sends it off Lazogol. So what do you mean after the Hagrola is not going Pesach HaYomayid? Elo, Amar Rav Mani, like Tasha, can go into Vidri, can lach a Vidri. So Rav Mani says, you're right, don't say before and after Hagrola, say before and after Vidri. Before Vidri again, so again, according to the gears that we have in front of us, it would mean either way he would be Potter. Either way, he'd be potter, because before Vidury, because Lashem, and after Vidury, because of Pesach HaYomayot, because at that point, after the Vidury, there's no reason to have a Pesach HaYomayot anymore. After that, it's being sent to a Chazazel. According to the other Jews, they mean before Vidury, he would be chayev, after Vidury, he would be potter. The Rambam, in fact, paskins along those lines, that even that if he shechts it even after Hagrola, before Vidury, then he's chayev. And the Raiva disagrees with that, and the Kalim have a hard time justifying the Rambam. But part of it is based on this Dirta over here, the Rabbis, that the Rambam learns. In other words, it's not just our Sylvia over here, choice which refers to the Sylvia and Yuma, that deals with this also. So the Rambam concluded on the basis of all of that, that the only time a person can be cultured for the story and the Shalayah is after the vision. After, at that point, it has no business being in the oil market anymore, but not before that.
Before that,
he'd be high, even though it's after Agrola, even though this one's already been determined to be the third law, although nevertheless, he'd still be high. Yeah. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, Harevea Vanira. So now we have, the Mishnah started by saying, you have group number one, we said, is the Paradroma and the third and the Shaleach. We say a person is popular for shechting them outside Oromoyed because it says El Petah Oromoyed, and these are not meant to come Petah Oromoyed. Then the Mishnah gave us a second group, which starts with Harevea, Vanirba, Vanmukta, Vanevan, etc., where there we said we learned from a different pasuk. So it says, Lifnei Mishkan Hashem, and these are not meant to be brought Lifnei Mishkan Hashem because they're possible of Torah. So the question is, why do we need a second pasuk? Well, Hanami typically is Pesach HaYomayim. Why don't we learn them also from Pesach HaYomayim? Bishleim Harevea, Vanirba, instead of Lifnei Mishkan Hashem. I can understand when it comes to Reveya Venirba, we need a special limud, we need a special pasuk to tell us that, to tell us that, again, if a person checks them outside the Azorah, he's potter, because Mashkacha Fledak Shinumi Ikra, because you can have a case. Suppose a person was Mashkish them, Vahodor Ravoy, and then afterwards he did reveal it. When it was designated, it was perfectly acceptable for a carbon. Only afterwards did it become possible. So therefore, we would say, you can't say Pesach HaOmer, because at some point during its life as Kodshim, it was going to be coming Pesach HaOmer until Revia was done. So now you need a separate process. Now you need a separate process. Listening Mishkan Hashem, but the fact is right now it's not drawing from Mishkan Hashem. Fine. Elam Mukta Veneva, but you have to ask, what about the ones in the Mishnah where it said Mukta, where it was designated, where it was set aside to be used as a carbon for Avodah Zarah? Or Neva, where it itself was worshipped as Avodah Zarah? How is that possible for those things to happen after it was designated as a carbon? Ein Adam Oysa Dava Sheina Shaloi. A person cannot ask there's something that doesn't belong to him. Once he was Makdish, the carbon doesn't belong to him anymore. It belongs to Hashem. It belongs to Hashem. So therefore, if at that point he were to designate it that he's going to use it as a carbon for Avodah Zarah, nothing happens. The same way as if Reuben owns an animal and Shimon says, I'm going to use this as a carbon for Avodah Zarah, nothing happens. Ein Adam Oysa Dava Sheina Shaloi. Same thing should happen. It belongs to Hashem. Right. By the way, you have a bit of discussion among Rishonim, so why is it Reveya Venirba would be like that? What about Ein Adam Oysa Dava Sheina Shaloi? The first of stuff like Elf talks about the idea is, we would say things that depend on Machshava, you can't ask for something that doesn't belong to you. But things that depend for, if you have an actual issue was done with it, Tosfos gives an example elsewhere. For example, if a person mixes shape of meat into somebody else's pot, it becomes osur. You don't say, Einonim osur dava shein shalai. The fact is, the shape of meat mixed in over there. So that would be the difference. The Rizer gives a somewhat similar explanation in a different way. He says that depends whether it involves a meister. Reveya and Nirva involve a meister by definition. Mukta and Neva don't. Okay. So anyway, so the question is, again, so how are you telling me that Mukta and Neva, it's possible to have it happen after the animal was designated as a carbon, such that you need a different posture to be memorized, yeah? from that Shchuteh Chutz doesn't apply to it? The answer is, because we can be talking about an animal that was designated for Kodshim Kalim, for Shlomim, for example, and our Mishnah would be talking, according to Rav Yosef Aglili, Dama Kodshim Kalim, Mom and Bailim. He says Kodshim Kalim are actually still considered the mammon of the owner. Because eventually what happens with Kodshim Kalim, you shech them, the blood is sprinkled, the emurim are put on the mizbeach, parts of them are given to the kohenim, but the owner gets the rest of them. So Rav Yosef really holds that Kodshim Kalim are actually considered, to be owned by the person who was makdish them. If he owns it, he's able to make it mukta neva. Ditanya, as we learn in the Braita, when the Pasuk says, Umar Lamal Bashem, the Pasuk describes, you have the case we're at the end of Parshas Vayikra, where Nefesh Kisechta, or Mola Ma'al Ba'ashem, the Chichesh Ba'amisa, that somebody denies a claim in Dinim Momenes of somebody else. We learned about this in Shavuos, for example. So, for example, the other person claims he owes him money for a loan, or a pikadon, or a payment for work, or what have you, and he denies it. So he denies it and swears falsely about it. So when he's ready to do shuvah, then he has to bring keren v'chaymesh. He has to pay the guy back keren v'chaymesh and bring an asham. So when it says mal amal b'ashem, that he commits a trespass against Hashem, that means lavis kodshim kalim shehin b'moyne divrei Rav Yosef Lili. Rav Yosef Lili says that comes to include kodshim kalim are included in this rule. So if Reuven takes an animal of kodshim kalim of his and deposits it for safekeeping by Shimon while he's out of town, and later on Shimon falsely claims you didn't give it to me or died or what have you, then says Rav Yosef Lili, he will be chayev keren l'chaymesh and asha. You don't say that the shlomim is considered mamon gavoya, and this whole din doesn't apply to mamon gavoya. No, you say it belongs to the owner, it belongs to Reuven. Therefore, it's like any other mamon of Reuven. No, come say not, right. So therefore, it's a divrei Rav Yosef Lili. Hilchach, so the bottom line is as follows. Reveya v'nirva dvar erva. So reveya and nirva is a matter of erva, so that can affect any kind of korban, that can affect any kind of animal, whether it's kulin or whether it's already been designated as kodesh. Would be referring, as we just said, to kodesh and kalim. That would have to be referring after if the animal was kodesh and kalim according to Rav Yosef Lili. What about the other ones in our Mishnah, where we had if the animal, we said if the animal was Esnan, where it was used as payment for a zoyna, for services, or Mechir, where it was exchanged for a dog, or Kilayim, or Yosidosin, how do you have those where the animal was designated as a korban and then afterwards? The answer is Bevlobis Kodshim, we would have to be talking about, but those cases are talking about that those, again, why do we need a separate process to be mamayis those? Because we'd be talking about, let's say, these are offspring of kodshim. If you have, in other words, in the case of Esnan, for example, the mother animal itself, again, is not able to become Esnan because it's not his anymore. But suppose the mother animal becomes pregnant and he decides to use the baby animal, the unborn baby animal as Esnan. Because the mother animal is already declared it kodshim. It's not his anymore. Unless it's a kodshim kalim, according to Rav Yosef Lili, fine. But we're saying, according to the Chachamim, or if it's kodshim, it's the chatas, for example, everybody agrees they can't. So you wouldn't be able to, it wouldn't be a valid thing. If he were to give it to a zona as her pay, it wouldn't matter, because it doesn't belong to him. But suppose it's pregnant, and he decides to use the baby, the unborn baby, as Esna. That unborn baby is able to become Esna, and it's not kodshim yet. Now, when that baby is born, Kosava, because the Tana of our Mishnah holds, Lode kodshim by the Yosin Hen Kodshim. Our Mishnah would hold, according to the opinion, for discussion in Smurda, when does the baby of an animal that's kodshim, when does it become kodish itself? Even while it's in the mother's womb, or only when it's born? Our Mishnah would go according to the opinion that it only becomes Kodesh when it's born. Therefore, before it's born, it's capable of becoming Esnan or Mechir, because it still belongs to it. The Halacha is not like that, right? The Halacha is Vladi Kodeshim B'mei'im on Kodeshim, so therefore, according to that, you wouldn't really have a way of... Right, if we say the Halacha is B'mei'im on Kodeshim, right. But our Mishnah is following the opinion that the Havayot and Kodeshim, they're not Kodesh yet while they're in the womb, therefore he's capable of declaring it to be Esnan or Mechir. And that's how it would become possible. And if we didn't have the words, listening, Mishkan Hashem,
one second,
we would say that since he declared the mother of Kodshim, then the baby, as soon as it's born, becomes Kodshim as well, and he should be high of Koreh for shefting it outside of his mitzvah. But we're saying no, because before it was born, he made it Esnan or Mechir. Therefore, it's disqualified even before it was born from being Kodshim. Therefore, listening, Mishkan Hashem teaches us he's possible for shefting it outside of his mitzvah.
It's not loy bala, it exists
there, it's in the womb.
But it's not in the world.
No, that's not it.
Okay.
The mother animal, sure, because the mother animal is a function, yeah.